And I did that this time. And I wrote something else, too, that I like better than both of the. I'm going to be doing that something else at both services today. It's actually the piece that I wrote for Bishop Spahn's newsletter. Mine will come out next week, but I just wanted to share it with our community before it even. The title of it is Dogma and the Perpetuating of a Dead God. So in 1966, the cover of Time magazine asked the jarring question, is God dead? Now, it was the first time that Time magazine used only text on its cover, and it just added to the impact of the very striking question, is God dead? Three very simple words that for a brief time created quite a stir throughout the United States. A sermon were delivered in rebuttal to the question. Even Bob Dylan got into the act in a Playboy interview saying, if you were God, how would you like to see that written about yourself? The National Review even asked the question that perhaps it was that Time magazine was what was really. The reality was that the article, it was written by a Times religion editor, John Elson. The article was much more nuanced than the magazine cover suggested, but those three words and what they might mean garnished all of the attention. Americans were shocked. They were outraged. Some were dismayed and others were simply just somewhat worried about it. Now, in reality, it wasn't even a new question. In 1982, German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche had already famously or infamously put forth the statement that God is. And before that, another German philosopher, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, had considered the death of God in his book, Phenomenology of Spirit or of Mind. The word can be translated either way. I suppose that the question of God is really, an age-old question. As Nietzsche pointed out, before the age of enlightenment, it was perhaps a much-needed concept, which helped establish morals and values, the order of the universe, and even gave legitimacy to governments. But with the rise of science and philosophy, the role of, or even the need for God, he argued, was lessened. For Nietzsche, not only was God dead, but humanity was the murderer. Our desire and pursuit to better understand the world, in his eyes, had killed. Now, Nietzsche didn't understand the death of God to be this really good, entirely positive thing. He realized that for many people, the death of God would bring on despair and meaninglessness. He realized that all the practical purposes for the understanding of God that humanity had once believed in were of little use in an age of enlightenment. But he also realized that humanity was not likely to let go of God all that easily. As he put it, God is dead, but given the way of men, there may still be caves for thousands of which his shadow will be. You know, I don't think he couldn't have been more correct, and the modern understanding of God couldn't be more damaging because of it. Nietzsche was an atheist himself, and he wasn't proclaiming, though, the ultimate death of God. He was proclaiming the death of a God that was needed in pre-Enlightenment times. And not surprisingly, Christianity took quite a bit of offense to the statement and ultimately started resisting what he was saying. What we ended up with was a pre-Enlightenment God in the age with systems actually designed to protect and support those old beliefs. As every year passed, we moved further and further into a more scientific understanding of the world and the church. The church built up more and more dogma to prop up the concept of a God that only had true relevance. For me, God is dead, or more precisely, the understanding of God we once had is dead. Well, it should have pushed believers into a deeper pursuit of the reality of God, a deeper pursuit of the truth of God. And instead, we circled the wagons with God in the middle and clung desperately to what we thought we knew in spite of evidence to the contrary. We created essential confessions built upon ancient understandings and demanded unfaltering adherence. And at times, the perceived threat of anyone thoughtfully challenging the religious establishment and its dearly held dogma was seen as so dangerous that those heretics were actually burned at the stake. Today, we simply chase such heretics out of the pulpit or out of the denomination. Rather than taking their lives, we destroy their lives. We require full loyalty, full fealty, full submission. You know, and in doing so, the modern church continues to perpetuate belief systems that make little to no sense when placed next to our modern advances in science and history and philosophy and literary criticism and, yes, even theology. Many insist on adherence to a belief in the virgin birth when literary criticism and science suggest otherwise. From the Trinity to the divinity of Jesus to the concept of hell, the modern church dogmatically holds on to beliefs that require somewhat of blind faith rather than the engagement of what that very same people might think of as our God-given. As Bishop Spong has said, Christians must now come to understand that God does not inhabit creeds and theological doctrine shaped with human words. It's the height of human hubris to believe that we can fully understand God, more or less contain God in creeds and doctrine. And furthermore, our anthropomorphizing of God is a damaging attempt to basically package God up into something we can hold on to, which further inhibits our ability to see the fullness of God and what God may be. So yes, in my eyes, God is dead. Or at least that God should be. That is, the God of most mainline Protestant churches, the God of the Catholic Church, the God of evangelical churches is dead. And it has been since the 1800s. But yet we continue to insist on worshiping its shadowy vestige on the walls of our lives. This attachment to the God of ages past, well, it also contributes to the decline of the church's relevance in the eyes of the public, particularly in the eyes of younger generations. They see the dogmatic adherence to beliefs that can't stand up to modern discoveries as hypocritical and frankly absurd. The church certainly should not ditch its historical beliefs simply in an effort to appease these folks in order to gain more members. But equally, the church must stop ignoring these outside critiques and stop dismissing them as irrelevant or as uninformed. There is a reason that the spiritual but not religious are one of the fastest growing religious in the U.S. And unfortunately, one of the reasons is the church itself. It is long past time for the church to shed its futile efforts in clinging to a concept of God that was established prior to a scientific age. It's time to hear the voices outside of the establishment who would like to be a part of a religious movement but refuse to check their minds at the door in order to do so. Yeah, it means there will be the need for quite a bit of deconstruction as we remove the dogma that carefully props up the dead God of the 17th century and before. Means that the religiously powerful will have to give up and the regulations that keep them in power. It means questioning the current human-made construct of God, which less than surprisingly makes God's main interest that of meeting the needs of those who created the image of God. It means letting go of the need to be correct or have right beliefs and instead to begin valuing more seriously the pursuit of what is true and what is real. A willingness to not know, and in that not knowing, be propelled into the quest for newly revealed realities of God that advances in science and history and philosophy and literary criticism and theology are offering up to us literally every day. The reality is, it is an exciting time to be seeking an understanding of God. It is an exciting time to be considering what your relationship toward with God is. We live in a time when information is available to us in a way and with an immediacy that it never has been before. We can quickly and easily expose ourselves to a multitude of theological perspectives from religions all over the world and throughout history. Scientific discoveries are revealing realities of the universe that we never could have predicted. We're learning more and more about how connected all Christianity is, or how connected all creation is, how much we each impact others and the environment in which we exist. We're discovering how fragile and how resilient life actually is. Technological advances in archaeology are helping us peel back the layers of many of our religious stories in ways that push us to new understandings of our religious ancestors and new theological perspectives. The list could go on and on. The real point is that, yes, God is dead. At least that God is dead. Has been for a long time. But it turns out that we are in a perfect day and age to begin rebuilding our understanding of what God is. The question that remains is, will our churches be brave enough to explore this with us? Will they be willing to let go of all of the dogma and trust in the community as we work together to reach a more modern understanding of an ageless God? Up until this point, the majority of churches haven't been willing to do so, forcing most spiritual seekers to go at it on their own. That may be the single most damaging thing the church has done to the pursuit of God. I don't claim to have much of a hold on the full reality of God, but one of the things that I am more certain about is that God is part of what connects us all. Pursuit of spiritual knowledge on our own is certainly rewarding and revealing, but I'm left to believe that there are certain realities of God that can only be revealed in the connectedness of community. It's time. It's well beyond time for the church to let this God of yesteryear die, lest it too dies trying to reanimate the dead.
Yeah, I'm David, and I was reminded of a cartoon in today's paper. And you may have to help me with the details, but I believe it was Ziggy who was standing there looking at the star. I've been wishing for things all these years, and things ever I've never got. That's not true. That bicycle you wanted in 1977 is coming here at the speed of light, and it'll be here about 2049.
That's great. Else.
Thank you, Mark. I'm hoping I'll have some thoughts too. I think it would be, I think all along, actually, what you're talking about is, for months, a different vision, God and, faith, effective. The old God is that hurts human. Being a woman was a big part of breaking away from that whole women's reproductive freedom. Don't get paid for your work. And
absolutely.
Letting go of that is really thriving. So thank you for your...
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Good morning. I'm Judy. Thank you, Mark, for your message. I liked all of it, but somewhere in there you mentioned community. And how important community. George and I just spent the weekend with our favorite religious And he mentioned that as a very unique characteristic of Christian communities, this is in the ancient world, of course, early years, people were making sacrifices to various gods, you know, for the weather, for your health, for all these sort of things. But the people who were, well, they weren't Christians at the time, I don't guess, but anyway, they formed community and they took care of each other. And that was unlike anything, you know, all the believers in Zeus weren't getting together for prayer meetings and singing. He mentions the music. So our community, I thought about us, our community is really important in terms of our lives, our belief, our understanding of God.
And in a lot of ways, like Dr. Ehrman, it is a throwback to the early, they called themselves followers of the way, but it's not surprising. The Christian story is told from the perspective of an underling, and all the other religions are told from the perspective of very powerful people. It's not surprising that early on Christianity actually attracted a lot of the people who were being oppressed and felt like outsiders and felt like they were struggling in life. See where a group of folks like that who gathered together see quickly the advantage to bonding and creating a real a neat callback. Are there others? Got two here. One front and then around.
What I hear you say that we have to construct a new...
Absolutely.
And what that requires us to do, though, of all the myth that we have that are supporting all those stories down, but it also means, and the intellectuals. You mentioned all those different theology, philosophy, and all those areas really do shine light on what we could now call a postmodern and reflect on, okay, how are we now going to spew of what God is or what God is not?
Exactly. No, I completely agree. I think major downfall of entry, and we've not been able, we've propped it up, try to move forward. Let all of these fields of study re-inform us of this thing we label God. The fact that we've let that sit behind for so long, it's sad, it's also disgusting because it's been done for powerful, people seeking power, but it's also damaging because of the folks that it's hurting, what it's done to.
Marco and Ralph, I wanted to thank you for your message this morning that so timely, and that that which we have heard in seminars and in websites and various other places is now declared from the pulpit. Amen.
I'd like to say just a couple of thoughts. And that I find the experience of being together with all of you inside a very sacred.
Right front. Save you.
Hi, my name is Gracia, and thank you for the message. And one of the and I appreciate all the comments. And one of the things I think that might want to consider holding on to is that even through all of our intellect, there will be things we may never, and I'm going to just call it the mysterious.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mark. I'm Jim. I didn't know you were an accomplished computer hacker. Yesterday, I completed an essay, I Am a Humanist, and magically this morning, Mark said, appears right here.
Well, I don't know. I wrote mine 4 days ago, so maybe you're the hacker. Maybe you're the hacker.